Hi everyone, thanks for joining me today. My name is Danielle Dean and I'm a data scientist within the Azure ML product group in Microsoft. So I've been an active user of R for many data science projects in the past, and in this webinar, I'll be discussing why as well as how to operationalize R code as a web service with Azure ML. So the first half is going to be presentation content where I will be going over some of the basics of Azure ML as well as how to use R within Azure ML. Now the second half is going to be open Q&A where Jaya Matthew, who's a fellow data scientist, will be joining me. So feel free during the live webcast to type in questions into the Q&A box that you'll see on your screen. So with that, let me jump right into the content. So what is R? I'm going to assume that the vast majority of you have either used R or at least know about its capabilities, but just for a very brief introduction. R is a free language and environment for statistics, data mining, and graphics. It runs on Windows, Linux, and a variety of platforms. At its core, it's an interpreted computer language that allows modular programming using functions. Its popularity stems in large part from the large number of statistical packages that have been contributed by R users across the world. So with R, data scientists and analysts can read in data, they can munge it, apply very simple to very complex data analysis techniques, and discover insights from data. Examples include reading in user purchase data to find segments of the population to target in different ways, analyzing customer engagement and behavior to reduce churn on a service, to discovering patterns and maintenance logs to proactively predict future failures of machines. So while R is a really powerful language and environment for discovering insights into these type of problems, let me take one specific example and explain the gap that data scientists often run into today. So suppose you're a data scientist or analyst, and your company is interested in a new sales prediction model for the upcoming quarters. You have historical data that you want to use to forecast into the future. You use this data and try to build a model of it. Suppose you try a time series model, maybe exponential smoothing model with seasonality with R. You iterate and pass data files back and forth to others on your team to try to find the best model. Suppose you finally settle with an ETS model accounting for seasonality, and you use that model to forecast into the future. Now, it's hard to share this result. So how do you pass this along to your business manager? You don't want to tell her to install these different packages, so instead you write this up into a PowerPoint and maybe something like an Excel document as well with the raw numbers. Now your business manager might love the presentation and gets excited by how well the model is predicting sales. And so she wants you to integrate it into several business applications and wants to be able to access it from things like maybe the web and a mobile client. Now you call up the engineering team and you ask, well, let's put those models into production. Let's put those models into our applications. But they may not have R in their servers, or they don't have an easy way for R to interact with the rest of the application. Now they tell you, yeah, we can take your R code and maybe we can translate into Java, but that's going to take significant time and significant effort in order to do so. So unfortunately, this is where a lot of data science projects end. They have a model that provide insight and can predict well, but can't be operationalized easily and put into a production working system. So Azure ML is a revolutionary shift in this process. It's really a major shift in that you can collaborate on machine learning experiments in the cloud together and take your R code as well as any pre-built in models. And this is the amazing part. You can turn it into a standard web service that can be consumed from anywhere around the world. So going back briefly to the sales prediction model example, the model provides predictions, but rather than the engineering team needing R along with the current packages on their servers, they can simply call up the REST API that is created and use the return predictions in their applications. So the revolutionary part of Azure ML comes from this one-click button to create a web service on top of an experiment with R code that can be consumed from anywhere around the world. There's simply no infrastructure setup needed, and it's scalable, reliable, and secure. So that was the big picture, but now I want to get into specifics of Azure ML as well as how this works with R. So Azure ML is a powerful cloud-based predictive analytics platform. It's completely managed for you. There's no hardware or software to buy. All you need is a browser. Currently, it's a drag, drop, and connect UI. I'm going to show you some examples of how that works, especially in relation to R. Now, of course, we know it has first-class R support, or I wouldn't be doing this webinar, But there are also many best-in-class algorithms that are proven from Xbox and Bing. And as mentioned, you can deploy the model in minutes to become an operationalized solution. So for those of you who haven't started with Azure ML, there's actually two pricing tiers. And the first is a completely free tier. So I'm really going to encourage every single one of you to go try this after this webinar if you haven't already. It's a completely free tier where you get free access to a single workspace with the ability to upload up to 10 gigabytes of data sets, and you can operationalize the staging APIs. There's also a standard tier where you can start with a one-month free Azure trial, and you can connect to Azure Storage and other sources, as well as operationalize as production APIs, which are more scalable than the staging APIs. I'm not going to go into any more details than into the pricing, but I just really want to mention that there's this free tier, so no excuses for any of you not to try it after this today. So there's a few basic concepts within Azure ML that are important to understand, especially in terms of the terminology. So the first is what is called the Azure ML Studio. So this is where you create your machine learning solutions. Within the studio, there are what are called workspaces. Now the workspaces, I tend to think of these like project folders. There's a workspace for related experiments, such as one for each broad use case that you're working on, or maybe for different data sets or different teams you're collaborating with. You can invite anyone to collaborate on the experiments with you. They don't actually need MSDN subscription. They don't need anything other than just to be invited with a Microsoft account. Now, the experiments that are within a workspace, you see an example here, those are where you're going to read in the data, munch the data, apply transformations, do feature extraction, do your modeling, your scoring, and evaluating. So basically your entire machine learning workflow. The example on the screen
here. I'm sorry to interrupt for a second, but I'm getting feedback just for you to slow down a little bit for folks to catch up a little bit. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks, Anne. Thanks for the comments, everyone. So this is and Anne, please feel free to interrupt if there's a comment like that in the future, of course. So this is a main page that you're going to get to when you log into Azure ML. So this is, again, just to recap, this is what is called the studio page. So when you log in, this is the main page you're going to see. There's workspaces. Now these workspaces are basically like project folders. Within a workspace, you have multiple experiments. So the experiment is where you do your entire data analysis workflow. So the example on the screen right here is an example where we're looking at an adult census income data set, so that's the top module on the top. So the little blocks are called modules within your experiment. And then you can very easily see the entire flow of the experiment. So here we have an income data set, and then it's applied to a different modules below it. So we have a missing value scrubber, and then we're going to select the columns that we're interested in, and then we split the data between training and scoring, and then we eventually evaluate our results. Now this is an example with a boosted decision tree example. Now this is really just an example. I just want to illustrate the different concepts within the studio. So here I'm not using any R code, but this is just to give you a flavor of what are the different concepts within the studio. Now there's an important button at the bottom right, which is the publish as a web service. And when you do this to an experiment, you'll then get into the web services part of Studio, which you'll see on the left-hand side. So that, I think, is the majority of things that I want you to understand here. Workspaces, which contain experiments, which you can turn into web services. And then you can invite anyone to collaborate on these experiments with you. So now that I've gone over the basic concepts within Azure ML, I just want to touch on the data science process and how to go about operationalizing within Azure ML in general, to help us understand ways to do this with R. So this is not a webinar on the data science process, so I'm not going to go over these individual blocks in detail, but I just want to give you a sense of the types of activities that you're going to be doing. So in the first broad group of activities, you're going to be developing the model. So here we're going to be defining exactly what we're looking at. We're going to need to access the data. We're going to need to process the data, create features, and then actually do the modeling. And in this modeling process, we're likely going to iterate multiple times in order to find the best model. So this is the part of the modeling concept that I like to call developing the model. Now, this is often, as I talked about before, where data science projects end. They end where you have a model, it provides you interesting insights, you might use it to create a PowerPoint or to give numbers, but you don't actually use that model into a production working system. So the next part about the data science process, where Azure ML really helps you, is to use that optimal trained model and to do the second half of the data science process, which is actually deploy the model. So in deploying the model, you're also going to need to access the data, and if applicable, do some pre-processing and feature construction. But in deploying the model, you're not actually training and developing the model. You're only scoring. So in deploying the model, you're using the trained model in order to score for new data points. So to go back to the sales prediction model example, we might develop the exponential smoothing model, for example, a time series model in the model development. But once that model is developed and we know which model we want to use, we then can save the model and only use that model to score in the deploying model. We're not actually training the model in that step. So these two broad paths, developing a model and then deploying the model, are one nice way to structure Azure ML experiments. So I usually set it up into have a training experiment where I might try different algorithms. So again, this is the developing model part. And so this is an example here where we have that same data set, the binary data set on the adult census. We're doing some different transformations to it. We're fixing missing values. And then we're trying two different types of algorithms. Now in this case, when we compare the algorithms, we find that the boosted decision tree does best. And so we're going to save that as a trained model and use that in the deployment. So at the next step, we're taking the saved model from our development process and actually deploying it. So this is what a scoring experiment might look like, where you have the data which is coming in, again, that same data, and we're doing some transformations. And then we're taking the saved model, and this is what we're using to actually score the model. And in the score model, we are setting before the score model to be the published input. This tells us what the data schema is going to be coming in as. And then out of the score model, we're setting that to be the published output. And this is saying what is the output of the web service going to be. And then we click that button in the studio that you saw earlier, which is that publish as a web service. And now you're taken to the web service part. So that was an overview of what you might do without R in Azure ML, an overview of the data science process in terms of developing the model, using your optimal model to then deploy it. But what I want to really get into today is discussing how you might use R in Azure ML. So there's a lot of different reasons why you might want to use R in Azure ML and why you might want to use R in your operationalized solution. So the first reason is that you might already have R code that you just simply want to operationalize. So you've developed your time series model, for example, and you just want it to simply create a web service on it that can be consumed anywhere around the world. So that is one great scenario for operationalizing R within Azure ML. There's a lot of other reasons as well. So you could want to do expanded data manipulation. So for example, you might want to transform the data in a specific way for your domain, for your, or you might want to actually aggregate it in different ways that aren't built-in ways in Azure ML. You might also want to visualize the data during the development of the model. So you might want to visualize it in different ways that you can't do with the built-in ways in Azure ML. And then the last reason why you might want to use R code is for different modeling frameworks. So the Azure ML has a lot of built-in modules that run really well, but there might be a different kind of modeling framework that is not built in. So an example is a survival analysis framework. If you want to apply survival analysis to your data, that's not a built-in model, and you might already also know how to do that really well in R. So you could use R in order to apply this modeling framework. So how R works in Azure ML is actually relatively simple. There's one XQR module. So you saw this screenshots of the studio before. There's one module that you can pull over onto your experiment and use in many different ways. So it comes with default code that helps you set up connections to other modules. So you don't have to know right away what is the code that I have to put in order to make this work. It comes with default code that is going to help you do that. And so you can see there's three input ports here. Let me just click through to show you what these are. So the first input port is a data set port. So this can read in data from earlier in your workflow. And this is called, this is what you're going to call it as, but again, the default code will help you set up these connections, so you don't need to remember that exact code. The second port is also a data set port, so you can read in another data set. So suppose you had two different data sets that you wanted to either append together or join in some way or do some transformation. So this is one way that you could do that, is you could put the two data sets into your execute R script and then do some functions on them. Now the last port is actually an optional zip port, and this is where you can read in your R code. So you can read in your R files, you can read in R data files, and this is where you can also install packages that are not pre-installed, which I'll show in a little bit. Now there's two output ports. The first one is a data frame, and this is where your main output is going to come from. Now, currently, you can only output data frames, not R objects, so that's just something to note, is that what you're going to be outputting here is likely the scores from the model. And then the second output is the R device output. This is where you get your standard output as well as graphics. So if you were to do something like plot the data set or create a histogram within this execute R script, if you were to click on this port and visualize it, you would see the standard output and graphics that you would see if you ran R, like you ran R on your local computer. So a few days ago, I did a small execute R script to see what packages were installed. And as of a few days ago, there was 410 packages that were pre-installed. So you can run this little script yourself to see what the current packages are installed. Now, this covers the vast majority of packages that you'll likely want to use, and therefore you won't have to use, if you're familiar with R, the install.packages function, but you can just call the library itself. Now, if there's a package that isn't there, you can also use that. You just have to follow a series of steps. So what you have to do is you have to zip the package from the R repository on your machine and include package dependencies if they're not already within Azure ML. Then you need to zip the packages together into one final zip file. And so you put basically all of the packages, all of your R code, all of your R data, everything you want to bring in from external into one zip file. And then you click the New button in the studio to add the zip as a data set. And then you simply just pull it onto the experiment and connect it to the last port. So this example here, we see packages.zip has been pulled on. It contains one zip file, which is the survival analysis package from R, and then we just simply use the install packages in command and then call the library in order to use the functions within the survival analysis package. And again, this is what you also do to read in your models, your R files and your R data files. Now, you might want to debug while you're running the script. You're likely not going to get it right the first or second time. These things take iterations, and so it's important to understand how to actually understand what's going wrong. Now, if you right-click on the module, you'll get more options. The output log is going to include output from R, and the reason why I'm pointing this out is it actually includes errors within the R code as well. So this is any kind of syntax errors you have, and this is because it's outputting from R. The error log, you might think that includes syntax errors, it's actually only errors from the Azure ML side executing the module. So if you're looking for debugging what you're doing, make sure you look at the output log. That's probably where you'll find most of the errors that are happening. And I also want to mention that sometimes it is useful to do debugging locally on R, and then once you have the R files completely ready, you can either simply copy and paste it into this execute R script, which comes up as a window, or you can read it in through the third port, like I mentioned before, like an R data file. So that was talking about using R in Azure ML. So there's simply that one execute R script, which you can use in many different ways. And you can do your data manipulation, you can do your transformation, you can do different R models. But the key point about this webinar is how do you take that R code and actually turn it into an operationalized solution? This is where Azure ML really stands out, is we want to take that R and we want to turn it into a web service, a standard web service that can be consumed from anywhere around the world. And so that's what I'll be talking about now. So Azure Web Services, it's a RESTful service. It's a prediction API that's based on the models that you develop. There's two main types. There's a request response service, where you have a single row input and a single row output. And the output row can contain multiple columns. This is where you're just scoring something really fast. It's a low latency, very high scale. So an example is you might have trained a model during your development process on credit card fraud. So you do your whole development process, you have an optimal model, and then you deploy that model, and the web service is just being called to say, for this new credit card transaction that's being sent into the web service, send back out based on the model, is this application fraudulent or not, along with the probability that it's fraudulent. So it's a really simple input-output that is called the response service. Now there's also a batch execution service, which is done on a large data set, so basically a whole batch of records. This reads files, reads from a file or SQL Hive queries. It can also write results to SQL or Azure Blob. Now an example of this might be where you have a whole set of data and you want to score a whole bunch of customers at once to say, out of all of these customers, which are the ones that are most likely to be repeat customers? So we can do something about that. Now there's four broad scenarios where you might be developing a web service, specifically a web service with R. Now these are just some example scenarios. There might be more, but these are how I like to kind of break them apart. So you might have a trained model on specific data. So this is probably the most common scenario where in your business you have specific kind of data that you want to train on and score on. So this goes back to the sales prediction model. You have specific data to your company that you train a time series model on, and you want to score into the future based on that model. So you have a model that's specific to your data that can really only score for that data. Again, this is most likely the most common scenario that you'll run into. Another kind of scenario that you might have is a trained model with generic data. Now this could be something like a sentiment analysis calculator. It's again, a trained model where it's done on specific data, or it's done on data, but the data tends to be more generic. Now, of course, one could argue that any data is specific to that realm. So if you did sentiment analysis on Twitter data, maybe it's not as applicable to Facebook. But still, the point is that the data could be more applicable than just to one specific use case. Now the third scenario is you might have actually a generic model, so where this is bring your own data. So this is the model is not actually trained, but you train the model during the web service call. Now the fourth kind of scenario you have might be as an advanced calculator, where you're doing something like a normal distribution generator. And we have examples of these in the upcoming slides that afterwards these slides will be posted, and you can click on the different links to see examples of these and play around with the data as well as the web service that's created. So just to note that. Now, setting up the web service, I've alluded to some of this earlier, but just to really point it out, because this is a very important part of how to actually operationalize your R code, you need to very carefully set up what your input and output of the web service on the experiment need to be. So the data schema needs to be fed into the model. So this is basically that green circle where it's labeled publish input. That is telling it, this is telling the web service, this is the kind of data that will be sent in. So this is a really simple example here. This is literally all of the code in the model, in the web service, I mean. So in the first execute R script, that's going over the schema definition. So I'll just pause here so you guys can look at the code a little bit. So in the schema definition, basically we just have a data set that has the number of successes and the number of trials for two groups. So this could be you're comparing two movies, one which is like 50 times out of 100, and maybe the other movie is like 60 times out of 100. And you want to know if that's a statistically significant difference or not. So in the first execute R script, we're setting up the schema of the web service. This is what the data input is going to be like. Now there's specific data in here so that when you're running through your experiment, you can see the results. But during the web service call, people can say what the number of successes and what the total numbers are. Now in the second execute R script, this is where the hypothesis test is actually conducted. So in this second execute R script, we're reading in the data. We're conducting a hypothesis test with the prop.test function in R, and then we're outputting the results, which is a string, based on whether the p-value is less than 0.05 or not. And then we're just simply outputting the results. So this is a really simple example that you can try after this that will go over the whole flow of how you can use R and how you can operationalize. Now, this is obviously a very simple example. We're doing a significance test of the difference in two proportions. But I think this gets you the idea of how you can set up a web service, have different inputs, and have different outputs. And very easily, with one click of a button, publish that as a web service. You now have a web service that can be consumed anywhere around the world. This web service is scalable, and you don't have to do any infrastructure setup. So this is the basics of setting up the web service. Now, once you click that button for publish as a web service, you get to this page, Web Services, and you can actually go ahead and test it. So this is the page that you'll see. And at the bottom right, you'll see that test button. And this is the button you can click to actually test it. Now here you get all the information about this is your API key. This is the help page gives you the URI information of the web service, everything that you need. But if you just want to test it at first, you click that test button. And you'll get a pop-up that will tell you, again, what the web service input is going to be. And if you remember back to the code, these are example inputs that you could put. The number of successes and the number of trials for the two groups, so you can test out your web service and make sure it's working. So if you click Run, it will run, and then you click Details, and you'll see this is the actual result out of that. It says the proportions aren't different statistically. So it goes over the whole flow. You had those two execute R scripts with very simple code. You could publish it as a web service. The web service was created for you, and now you've tested that web service. Now this web service can be called and consumed in many different ways. Now, before I talk about the many different ways that you can actually consume the web service, I want to touch briefly on an optimization of R when you're operationalizing. And I want to talk about this for the more advanced R users. I know I have people of all different backgrounds, but just to touch briefly on optimizing more advanced algorithms. So before I go there, I want to just, this is an overview of the entire process. So from the beginning, where you're creating a workspace, to then building the model, and then publishing it as a web service. Now, if you remember back to the beginning of the presentation, where I talked about the two steps of developing a model and then deploying the model, during that process, I talked about the fact that you might have a training experiment, and then you have a scoring experiment. Now, this training experiment, I say you might want to save that trained model and deploy that trained model in the deployment process. And the reason why you might want to do this is you don't want to train the model, which could take a lot of time, and you want to use that trained model in the scoring. So you want the scoring part, the web service call, to be very fast, to just simply give us the score and not to actually do the whole training process. Now, with R, as I mentioned, right now, currently, you can only output a data frame. So in order to do this with R, you actually have to serialize the model and output it as a data frame. And this gives you example code here. Now, in deploying it, what you want to do is you want to read in the serialized model, unserialize it, and score using the saved model. So basically, this is doing that with built-in modules, what you can do with that right-click, save as a trained model. You can do that same thing by serializing it and unserializing the model. Now, if you have relatively simple models and models that run really fast, this might not be a necessary step. But if you're going to really operationalize R code in a serious production manner, then this is a step that you might want to consider in order to really get very low latency on your web service calls. Now, web services, you're creating basically a standard web service, so it really can be consumed from any device that has internet connection. But there's sample code for R, Python, and C# provided in the help page of the web service. So even if you're a data scientist or analyst who are not familiar with web services, you can consume the web service right away based on just the sample code that they give you once you publish this web service. Now, for those of you who are developers who know how to consume web services, you know that you can easily integrate these into production. So with a standard REST API that you can consume from web apps, mobile apps, RStudio or IPython. There's even an Excel plugin so that it gives a URL here for the Excel plugin, which basically you tell it what the URI is as well as the key and then the features, and then you use the Azure Predict function, and then you can simply call the Azure ML web service using just this function, pressing enter, and you can actually consume right from Excel. So this is a pretty cool thing when you have a really advanced model that you've built in R, and now you can publish that web service, and even your colleagues who don't want to consume it in a fancy way, just want to consume it in Excel, they can do that. So now I just want to touch briefly on two potential avenues for these web services. Now, you might be interested in using these web services only for private use, only for either your company or yourself privately. So you could put your wrapper around the R code in Azure ML, as I've discussed, host the web service in the cloud, and then use it privately. Now the second option is this really interesting option, which is publish in the Azure Marketplace. And Joseph Shirosh, who's the Corporate Vice President of Information Management and Machine Learning, talks about this as a new data science economy. So this is the first time machine learning data scientists and data analysts can actually publish their models and as well as their data into a publicly consumable marketplace. So you can publish your web services, and then those can be called by users and devices around the world. So they can actually subscribe to your models or your methods and actually call them from any device around the world with an internet connection. So this is a really completely different way of thinking about how we can publish our results as data scientists. So to go back to those four scenarios I talked about earlier, we actually have we have examples on the Azure website. And I know you probably can't click on these viewing the webinar, but we will share the slides with you afterwards, and you can click on these different examples. These are examples with all of the code there, so you can create this yourself in Azure ML and try to do this, replicate the same thing yourself. With our code, we've been able to put the R code in Azure ML, create a web service, and then publish it to a marketplace. So right now, you can either go there and try this yourself to do it yourself, or you can actually go there and consume these web services. So those sentiment analysis example, you could go to the marketplace and sign up for this web service and try the sentiment analysis web service on all of your Facebook statuses for the last year to see, for example, what's your average mood. So these are some examples that I really encourage you to afterwards go and check these out. Again, all the code is there so that you can really play around with this and learn how to use Azure ML and do these things yourself. In order to publish on the marketplace, there's five steps. Some of these you'll be doing to publish your web service anyway. So the first couple steps, publish the web service in Studio. As I've shown, that's just simply that button, publish as a web service. Then once you get to that page, there's another link that says push web service to be a production web service in Azure portal. And so those are the two steps that you'll likely be taking whether or not you're publishing on marketplace. Then for those who want to publish their web services on the marketplace, you have to register as a publisher and then use the OData endpoint and production API key. I'm not going to go into too much detail. There's plenty of videos specifically on this, which again, we'll share the links to. And then just fill out other information about the service, and you've now published your web service on the marketplace. And this is an example of that. So this is an example of ETS plus STL forecasting, which is done with R and put in Azure ML and published as a web service with Azure ML. And again, all the sample starting code is there, as well as a web app, which is linked to this, which is built on that service. So you can input the frequency, the seasonality of the data, how far in the future you want to forecast, and then your time series values, and it will output the predictions as well as a graph for that predictions, which you can see here. And there's actually also sample starting code for this web app on the documentation as well. So in addition to trying out the creation of the web service, you can also try out the creation of the consumption mechanism of the web service if you'd like. So that's it. Thank you guys so much for listening. Again, just to reiterate, there's now a free tier of Azure ML. You can go try this out today. It is completely free. All you need is a Microsoft account, email address. There's no credit card or anything needed, so I really encourage everybody, if you haven't already, to go try these things out yourself and to use the documentation that we provided for all these web services, especially if you're interested in R. We have a lot of documentation on creating different kinds of web services with R. So go try this out yourself today. So thanks very much. Now we're going to jump into Q&A. I haven't looked at the Q&A button at all. So Anne, I'm interested to hear what people have said during the session for Q&A and to answer questions that people might have had.
Absolutely. The home for everything that Daniel has mentioned, just so everybody knows, is azure.com/WACML. So off of there, then you'll be able to go to ML Center, which is where we have all of the training videos and the documentation specifically about uploading onto the marketplace, as well as the Get Started Now button is the place that you go just to log right onto that free trial with your Microsoft account ID. So if you want to try out all the things that Daniel spoke about, then that azure.com WACML is essentially the center of the universe for that. And one of the things that was asked in the Q&A window that I think would be really valuable to talk about, Danielle, is the idea of what data specifically has to be in the cloud. So I think this is something to really call out because of the fact that many people have their data in all kinds of different places, not our cloud, in a different cloud or on premises. And so I had replied that there's a built-in storage space in Azure ML. So one method is just to upload a training set from on-premises, and then you run your production web service over the data wherever it lives. So essentially, at the end of the day, the only thing that absolutely must be in the cloud is your training data set. But in order to get the most value out of this and the scale, then we would recommend that you use our Hadoop in the cloud, which is HD Insight, or if you're using SQL Server in our virtual machine or any of our other Azure assets. But Danielle, in terms of the how, you want to talk for a minute about how that idea works of that your on-premises data and bringing it into the cloud and a little bit there.
Sure, and I think you summarized the basic idea really well. So all you need in the cloud is what you need to train the data with. So if there's if your data is relatively small, or even if your raw data isn't relatively small, but the data that you need to train eventually with is relatively small. So say on your on-prem or your data that is elsewhere, you can create a training set, aggregating, joining, munging the data in whatever way to create the data that you eventually need to model. That is the only data that you actually need to bring into Azure ML in order to do your training. And then the web service can be called consumed from any device. So on the data that you're going to actually call the web service with, that can be anywhere. Now, if you want to retrain the model at a consistent manner, or you want to do a lot more data transformations and work with the data experimenting in many different ways, you might want to bring it into the Azure cloud. And there's a lot of different ways to do that depending on the size of the data. So if it's a relatively, and also depending on the frequency of data transfer. So if you just have one lump sum of data, like say 10 terabytes of data, that will be a very different way of moving that over to the Azure cloud than other data that say streaming data. And there's different mechanisms. I don't want to go into all of those, but different mechanisms for different types and different frequencies of data movement. So if that's that might be an avenue that you want to look at if you want to consistently use Azure Machine Learning on different types of data and play around with a lot of different types, a lot of different ways of experimentation. And Jaya, I think you're also on the line too, if you want to pop in with any answers. Anne, do we have any
sorry,
questions?
Sorry, I was on mute accidentally. I'm on the Q&A window, so if anyone has additional questions, then I'm moderating those as well. But this, what you were saying, applies to AWS as well, right? In terms of bringing in just the training set for the data, and then being able to run that web service ultimately over AWS. data. Can you speak about how that works a little bit?
Yeah. So the same thing would apply if there's a specific data that the model needs to be trained on, and that can be brought over in a relatively small format, or the data can be brought over into Azure to train on, and then the web service can be consumed anywhere. So the actual data can be the data that is going to be scored can be stored elsewhere. So it really depends on if you want to continue experimenting with lots of data. It's obviously optimal to have it close to the machine learning. So if you want to consistently look at the data in the machine learning platform, you might want to bring a significant portion over into Azure, but that's not to say that you have to. You really only need to bring over the data that you want to train the model with. The data that you want to score with, it can really live anywhere.
Right. And so, and as you said, it's really just about the training set. And when you spin up an ML workspace, then that storage space comes along with it so that you can put your data there. So that's, from on-premises or from AWS or wherever, the bulk of the data lives.
Exactly. And with the free tier, you can upload up to 10 gigabytes of data, even with just the free tier.
And then we additionally have a question, would this environment be suitable for developing an information retrieval model to develop an intelligent way of finding the right topics and information from large amounts of documents? In that case being, not so much a prediction, but recognizing relevance?
Yeah. So definitely, it doesn't necessarily have to be a machine learning model that predicts. It could be a machine learning model that gives you a score for something. Basically, anything that if you can do these things in R, then you can do these things in Azure ML. So if there's some sort of algorithm that you can apply, it doesn't necessarily need to be a prediction into the future in terms of like the future dates, like the time series example I was giving. But really, any kind of algorithm that you can work on data and apply to new objects to get a score, that is the scenario where you'd want to apply this kind of thing.
Okay. And then we have the cost question, which really, it just depends. What the best way to do to think about it is to go and try it out for free and just see, what you're going to be spending in terms of compute, just because that is the main cost driver from that. So then running your experimentation in our free space is the best way to determine, what sort of cost that you might run on your particular implementation.
Yep.
And then, so another question is, suppose my team is working on, proprietary data sets with, public release concerns. The way that we're seeing customers handle that now in terms of the security concerns with anonymous data and certainly our, financial services and healthcare customers, then, they're finding, that they have restrictions about what they can put into the cloud. And what they're doing is in the training set, then they're making the very secure data anonymous for that training set, putting that into the storage space, then building the models based on that, and then running it over the data that is on premises. And the data is then at that point never persistent in the cloud, which is then helpful for them in terms of being in compliance there.
Yeah, great point.
And then I have a question here. He's thinking of a project where he'll have the customer's input variables into the web service and have the score output into the web service. And he's asking, can I use the model on the back end without having to throw out the model into the cloud? So, Daniel, you can address this, but if you're asking whether or not the model can be on-premises, I don't think we have the scenario there. I think the model is always living in the cloud. Is that correct, Daniel?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
With the current stuff, it's all on the cloud. The web service is always in the cloud. Yeah.
Right. And that's the way that, you know, when we were thinking about building Azure ML holistically, the way that we make machine learning then more accessible to more people, scalable and affordable, is really by using the cloud. Because
exactly.
The reason that on-premises machine learning is so expensive in many cases is just because of the amount of, you know, hardware and software and tooling that's required for that. And so being able to put this in the cloud has essentially abstracted a lot of that cost and management away. So that's the way that we have made this accessible and affordable is really doing it in the cloud. So, you know, that's a way to think about it. But knowing that a lot of you have your data on-premises and in other clouds, then that's why we have created the methodology of the storage space for the training set where, you know, at the end of the day, then the only thing that you absolutely have to have in our cloud for this is that training set. And then the question, what's the best way for me to bring in large sets of models stored as R? The models are today stored outside of Azure ML, and they are saying that they would need to do something like that nightly. So what about stored models that are already in R today?
Yeah, so the way to do that currently is to use that third port of the execute R script, so to read, to zip the file and to read it into the, read it in through that third port. So I'm not aware of currently a way to support updating that programmatically.
Okay.
So the way I know about it today is that that's read in through the third port. So it would be uploaded through a zip file and then rerun.
And then there's a question about, you know, do we lose our IP, you know, once the model is uploaded? And the answer to that is absolutely no. The reason that you have a private workspace for Azure ML that is just yours is the idea of being able to then put your custom R code into that workspace that is exclusively
exactly.
tied to you. It's only tied
exactly.
to your enterprise, you know, your master Microsoft Azure subscription, or, you know, in the case of the free offer, it's just tied only to your live ID. So that is exclusive to you. So the idea is no wasted work, and that's why we made R a first-class citizen of Azure ML, is because the work that your proprietary, essentially, we've been calling it the special sauce that you're already doing. We want to make sure that you can bring that in holistically in a, you know, safe, secure, personally owned environment, and then mix and match it with the algorithms that we already have there. And we're finding that a lot of our customers are doing that, is that they're using the algorithms that we've developed through, you know, Bing, Xbox, Cortana, Skype Translator, you know, all of those things are in there for your use. So then you can bring in what you're already doing and mix and match with what we have there. But again, that's exclusively yours.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I would even take that one step further in that when you publish to the marketplace, you're really publishing the web service and not the underlying code. So if you have some really great R code that you've developed, this really amazing algorithm, that you do want to take the output of it publicly, but you don't want to take the underlying model, this is really the first way that you can do this, is Azure Marketplace really provides a great avenue to publish the machine learning developments that you've made.
Right. Exactly, because the machine learning marketplace is a way of being able to expand machine learning out to people who have honestly no idea how to do machine learning itself, but a developer who wants to take advantage of that machine learning goodness in their application or their solution then can go onto the machine learning marketplace and then, you know, pull down that service or that API. And so that's what, you know, Daniel referenced, that our CVP feels really passionate about. You know, folks like yourself that have something that you want to market and you want to put out from a global perspective, we've built all of the infrastructure for you from a billing perspective. You know, all that you need to do essentially is to put yourself in as a business and monetize and scale through the machine learning marketplace. And as I said, we've got the instructions on ML Center, which is all off of Azure.com ML, to where you're able to do that. And we, from a Microsoft perspective, have put up, is it 15 now, Danielle, the API
yeah.
that we have
yep.
there? So we have 15.
Yeah,
go ahead, Danielle.
I was just going to say there's 15 that are based solely on R, and then there's a few others that are using some of the built-in algorithms within HTML.
So if you check out Machine Learning Marketplace, then we have APIs up there today that are for free, just to essentially show, you know, folks how it's done and, you know, how that's positioned and how we've done the write-up. And, you know, just because we don't necessarily see this as a place for us, but really more a place for you to enable that the data science economy from here. And then we have a question, is it possible to create a Sprock callable from SQL Server to R and return the output to SQL Server?
Could you say that again?
Is it, I think the question is how to call, to create a model that's callable from Microsoft SQL Server from R, an R function, and return the output to SQL Server. So is it essentially possible to create a loop from on-premises SQL Server for something that you've created in R? Opinion is that that's just exactly what we've been talking about in terms of needing to put that training set up in to the storage space. But once you have your web API live, then you can call it on SQL Server on premises. But then I think the question is that I'll need you to address, Daniel, is where, once you actually have the output of that, then is it possible to then put that into SQL Server on premises, and what does that look like?
Sure. I've never heard of that specific use case, but basically if a developer can write code to consume the web app and put it somewhere, which I'm assuming somebody on this line or somebody else can do, then I'm assuming that's possible. But I don't want to say for sure because I've never done it myself. But this web services can be consumed from anywhere. As long as the code can be written to consume the web service and then subsequently put the output somewhere, then I'm sure it can be done.
Yeah, Daniel, can I jump in for this? So actually, this is possible. So basically, you would just have a worker invoke the web service, and then you can write it back into SQL Server.
Great. Thanks, Jara.
So yes. Okay. So the how about moving large data sets between Microsoft SQL Server and R, like over one terabyte? I mean, that's a question I think that's more around how you would do that on premises, because when we're thinking about SQL Server and the scalability, our perspective is around the cloud, right? On SQL database, which is essentially SQL Server in the cloud is Azure SQL Database, and then we have SQL Server running on a virtual machine. And so if we're thinking about this from a cloud scenario, then we would encourage you to move your SQL Server data either into a virtual machine or into SQL Database. If you're talking on premises, then we would be back to the original scenario, which is essentially doing the training set in the cloud and then running it over on premises.
Yep.
So I'm not seeing any more questions in the Q&A window. I'll give you guys one more second to see if there's anything else. And this will be available on demand, this recording, so that then you can reference it as soon as it's live. We'll send you out an email. And also, as I mentioned, the home. Someone has another one. Okay. can we run Azure ML in our private network is the question.
So right now it has to be run in the cloud, the Azure ML in the cloud, in the public cloud.
Okay. And then the Jason's question, since R loads into memory by default, are there any optimizations within Azure to handle larger data sets?
Currently, there's no separate optimizations like parallelization of the different cores or anything like that. But the fact is that you're all running it all in the cloud, so that comparative to your local desktop, I guess it depends on how good your local desktop is. But there's no specific, at least that I'm aware of. But Jaya, if you're aware of something specific, please jump in.
Not that I'm aware of, I think, but you can invoke the service on a batch mode, so maybe that'll help.
And we're being asked about on Python and SDK. Python is definitely something we're looking at really closely. The best way to find out when we launch updates like that is to stay tuned to our blog, which you can also access off azure.com/ml, because as soon as we have things out like Python, like SDK, then that's the first place that we announce it. So you know, we are very aware of the interest in Python here and looking very closely at that. And then another question is, can I use Express Route connection to the service via the public internet?
That's a great question. And we have not tried that ourselves, but I believe the answer is yes. We've been looking into it. I want to say yes, but I just have not tried that myself, and I'm not aware of anyone else who has tried that. But I don't see any reason why not, because you can use Express Route to get it to the cloud and then not over the internet, and then you could use it there within Azure. So I don't see any reason why not.
Okay. And then there's a question, you know, when is this expected to become a paid service? It actually is a paid service today, so it's in preview pricing, so it is possible to go into our standard service, which is available today, and that's where you get the full functionality. And you know, in addition to being able to put the web services into production, but we're just encouraging folks, you know, to give it a try, just because we're, you know, haven't been out very long, and I know folks are not as familiar with us, and that's why we've released something that's, you know, perpetually free, just to make sure that, you know, folks have an opportunity to try it out for, you know, no commitment before they commit to the paid service. And then plans to support F#. I will look at that. That is not one that we've heard as often, but certainly that's interesting if that's something that folks are looking at. And then what about data sets in Mathematica? What does compatibility look like there?
Oh, I've never heard that question before, so I'm actually not sure. I'm assuming that you can, usually out of all of these kind of programs, you can export as a CSV, so that's probably what I'd recommend to start, is try exporting it as a CSV and then uploading, but I don't believe the raw Mathematica support or data files are supported.
Okay. Okay, that's time, everyone, but again, it's... this will be located on demand, and then there's significant amount of data available off of, you know, Azure.com, WACML, and ML Center, and we also have a forum that is available off of that hub. And so, if you do have further questions or feedback, because it's, you know, really interested in things like you know, Mathematica, F#, Python, SDK, the things that you all are interested in seeing, please let us know that in our forum, so we can keep track of, you know, how we can continue to improve the service for everyone. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you guys so much.